Now, who can remember what we studied last week? By the way, we're on our last book, 37 through 48. So and some of these lessons are short enough we could almost do two a night, but we're gonna stick to one.
I have a question about last week.
Yeah, what's your question, John?
If they were in through the roof,
right?
Jesus was a carpenter. Does that mean he fixed it?
That's a good one. That's a good one there. Yeah, you never thought about that one. I mean, the story that John's referring to is that the story of the man whose friends brought him to the roof and they opened the roof up, lowered him down in the midst of everybody, right? And so you're asking, did Jesus fix the roof for him? I don't know, but Jesus could have just spoke and said, hey, the roof be fixed. And
he fixed the man.
And it would have been fixed, but he healed the man. He healed the man. But I don't know who fixed the roof. That's a very good question. The Bible doesn't tell us that. So obviously God doesn't want us to know that, and that doesn't really have any bearing on our relationship with him, right?
Right.
So, because the only thing that is in the Bible, the more I'm reading and learning, is that anything that's in the Bible is what God wants us to know. Anything else out of the Bible? It's all right. Good to know it. It's good to suspect it and figure it out, but he put in there what he wants us to know. So I'm sorry, God. I can't answer that.
The Sadducees, Pharisees, they didn't like him because he claimed to be the Son of God.
Yep. And what happened there? What did they do right afterwards? After they saw him heal this man, what did they do?
They plotted to kill him.
They immediately went into attack mode from there on. And every time you see here from that point on, their whole focus was to get rid of Jesus. And why did they want to get rid of Jesus?
Because it was taking away their power or whatever, their status.
And he was teaching something that was totally opposite
of
what everybody heard.
Right.
What they were teaching. So, yeah, I mean, and we kind of talked about what that would be like and how these people would be flocking to him. Hey, this is something new. Who recognized Jesus in this? In one of the stories, we
evil spirits.
The evil spirits, and we know why did they recognize Jesus?
Because they were heaven before they ever
fell. Yep. So here they were created. God created them, and they were with Jesus in heaven beforehand. And so they chose to follow Satan, and we know what happens there. And why does Jesus want us to believe in him? Huh? Okay. Well, I mean, hold that thought. We'll go on a little bit further with that. Mark 4 is where we're going to go tonight. And we're going to talk about another story about where Jesus heals a man who had evil spirits or demon possession. And we're also going to be talking about a story where Jesus does something. He speaks just like he did at creation to bring about a miracle. So that's going to bring us. So Mark chapter 4, verses 35 through 37, and I'm about to grab the wrong remote there. And here he calms a storm, but we're going to talk about that. So 35 through 37, someone want to read it.
On that day when the evening had come, he told them, let's cross over to the other side of the sea. So they left the crowd and took him along, since he was already in the boat, and other boats were with him. A fierce windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking over the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped.
Okay, so you get this picture of the story. Here's where we're at. Here's the Sea of Galilee, right in the middle. And in the Sea of Galilee is kind of in a valley or below the outer regions around it. So everything around it is higher. Water flows into it, but that creates an area where storms can rise up quickly because of the weather coming across the mountains. And if you've been around like Lake Michigan or some of these lake or Deep Creek Lake up in western Maryland, if you ever get up that way, those areas where the mountainous regions are, storms can come across those mountain ranges. And you know if you're driving and you go through a tunnel on one side of the mountain, you can be raining or snowing, and you go on the other side and the sun's shining. And so you had this thing. That's a little bit of information there, but where were Jesus at? You have to go back to the beginning of chapter 4. Jesus begins teaching by the lake shore. So he's on the lake shore, and the crowd is so large, in verse 1, so large that he gets into a boat, and he sits in the boat. And so while he's in the boat, he begins to teach, and he teaches from, looks like it, I don't know how long it was, and doesn't say how long it was, but we know that it's in the evening that Jesus gets into the boat to leave. So it's at nighttime. It's probably might be something similar to this, maybe getting dark outside, the sun maybe getting ready to go down. How long he was in the boat teaching, I have no idea. And as he goes through and he teaches about the scattering of the seed, the farmer who throws the seed out, and then he teaches about the lamp and the growing of the seed, and then the mustard seed, and then he gets to this thing where he's like, okay, it's time to leave, guys, let's go to the other side. So I have no idea where they were at. Are they on this side of the sea going here? Are they going this direction? It doesn't say. It just says that he's... But it does tell us in the next chapter, the next story, where we'll get close to an idea where it's at, but... He's going across the lake, and a storm. And there's other people following him in boats. Mm-hmm. So that's a very interesting note there. So the storm's thing, and waves are falling and crashing over the side of the boat. Okay? So now let's read verse 38.
And he himself was in the stern, asleep on a cushion. And they waked him and said unto him, Teacher, carest not thou that we perish? And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said unto the sea, Peace be with you. Peace be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm.
All right. So we have first, look at this. Jesus is sleeping in the boat. Now, if you're in a boat, how many of you have ever slept on a boat? Oh, you have. Okay, mm-hmm. What do you mean by sleeping on a boat? Was this?
Well, I was so seasick, I fell asleep.
Okay, so you were on a boat. Was the boat in a school that made you seasick, or was just being in the motion?
I was out on a bay one time. It was a little rough.
It was a little rough. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this year I had the opportunity to go tuna fishing, we had to go way out on the ocean. Never did the first time I've ever done it. And as we're driving out, they throw this big bean bag down on the floor of the boat, and they said, "Hey, it's going to be a couple hours before we get out where we're going. 2 or 3 hours if you want to sleep." I actually never laid down on a boat before, so I was like, well, okay, I'll sit on this thing. So I sat on the bean bag. It's a big bean bag, and I actually fell asleep. Mm-hmm. Now here's Jesus. This is what he's doing. Now, if you're on a boat, and this is a boat that's not like our boats. I mean, you had sails, and you had to row. I don't know. But for some reason, Jesus goes and falls asleep. Why did Jesus fall asleep? He was probably tired. It tells us that he's like us. Even though he's the Son of God, he was man in the flesh, and he gets tired.
Right.
Now, he just poured all his energy into people all day long, or for maybe hours, or however length of time, teaching everybody else on the seashore there that was there. And so he's like, I'm going to go get some rest. And he goes in the midst and he falls asleep, and obviously the storm's going on. However, what did the disciples do? Now, Scott, you read it just like this. Teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown?
Right.
Now I want you to put yourself in these guys' shoes. Do you think they were teacher? We're going to drown, or do you think they were literally yelling?
Yeah.
Jesus, wake up! Come on, we're going to drown! I mean, I don't know.
It must have been going on at the time.
I know that if I am on a boat and I'm drowning, I think I'm going to be yelling and doing whatever I can to pray, maybe yelling, to do what I can to wake up Jesus. You get this picture there, and then, you know. We read in verse. Let me ask this question: why should the disciples have already known that Jesus cared about what was happening to them?
They would have been with him when he did the miracles and healed the people.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had the miracle where they would have been. Where last week we talked about where they lowered the man down. Didn't they know that Jesus cared about them?
I mean, I feel like this. If Jesus is on the boat with me, I'm okay.
Well, that's you would think, right?
I would probably feel that way unless I really actually thought I was going to drown. The thought of drowning would be very distressful.
Yeah.
Well, how long did they wait?
Right.
Well, that's a good question too.
Right.
We don't know that. We don't know where they
coming in the boat. So
yeah. And if you've ever been on a boat where a storm comes up out of nowhere, or you're on a boat and you can see way off. I mean, if you go out on the bay, you can look and you can see storm clouds coming across the bay or coming towards you. You're like, it's time to head in. You got some time. This I get this picture based off of what we know of the area, that this storm came up really quick. Like, they were on the boat, it was calm, it was peaceful, and all of a sudden it just comes out of nowhere. That's the impression I'm getting based off of the information of the area, the geographical area, that, hey, at times, this is an area that people know that storms could come up automatic. Now, they didn't have life vests, possibly, back then. They wouldn't have had things like that we are accustomed to today. But we do know that the disciples had seen Jesus and that he cared about them because they saw how much his compassion was spread apart to people when they brought those who were sick to him. Or, you know, that their needs. Jesus took care of their needs. And Jesus wakes up, you know. Now, I don't know if Jesus woke up wide awake or did he wake up, stretch, you know, like we do, get up, you know, and just... Guys, take it easy, calm down. No, what does it say that Jesus said here? He just wakes up and he turns to the waves. Maybe he sits up. I don't know if he stands up, puts his hands up. Doesn't say that here. It just says that he wakes up and he says to the waves, be still. And suddenly the wind stopped. Now, has anybody ever been in a storm? Yes, we all have, right? Have you ever seen a storm go from volatile 50, 60 mile an hour winds to nothing? Has anybody ever seen that or experienced that?
Yeah, I've been in plenty of storms where it's been like that, where it's been, and then there's a couple. Like,
you have?
One side of the road to the other.
Okay. I've never been in a storm like that. I mean, it seems like it's, you know, you get these gusts of winds and then they start to die off a little bit, but I would love to see something.
I mean, not a drastic cutoff, but within a minute or so. You know,
it calms right down. Goes right away.
Yeah.
Well, I get this picture here from this is that it's suddenly the wind stopped, which means that, the waves would have just, you know, eventually would have gone away from. You wouldn't have had this volatile overflowing of water and buckets trying to get the water out or whatever they were doing to try to keep themselves afloat. And it says, and there was a great calm. So going from, you use your imagination what size boat they were in, because I have no idea. But at least hold 12 men, because we had the list of all the men last week of all his disciples. So we knew at least Jesus and 12 disciples in this boat. So we have 13 people at least in the boat. And waves filling it over and over. And I like to let my imagination run. So when it says the great calm, like a sea of glass, to go from these choppy waves to just sea of glass. And if it's dark outside, like the night, you know, the moon's out, maybe, and, you know, you get this reflection of peace and calm all around. Again, that's just me letting my mind run. Doesn't say that the moon was out here in the Bible, but it says that great calm came upon it. And let me read you what Colossians 1:6 says here. Why would that? It's because of this. By all things are created. That's why the wind listens to him. The seas calm down. The storm went away. Because he spoke all that stuff into existence. He created that from the very beginning. Then Jesus asked a question to them. Let's read with verse 40 and 41.
But he said to them, why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him?
He asked them a question. Why do you have no faith? And why are you afraid? No, if you just were with Jesus and you experienced a miracle like this, why would you be afraid of Jesus?
I don't think they fully comprehended who he was at that point.
I would agree with you. I don't think they did have an understanding of who Jesus really was.
Yeah, they've seen him with individuals, but never something so big.
Right. God created man, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he had the power to heal man. They had never, God created demons. Not demons, but he created the, angels, yes. He created angels, so ultimately he did create the demons, but they were not created at that point as demons. They were created to serve God, and they chose to rebel with Satan, so then they became the evil spirits. So you have this God creating man, he created the angels, and now you have God, a story where God created creation, and now creation is responding to his voice. And he says that, and then he asks, they became afraid, and they began to ask themselves, hey, who is this man? Who is Jesus? They didn't ask Jesus this question, they asked it amongst themselves. So you, hey John, who's Jesus? Who is this man? And I mean, on the boat.
Right. I mean, it just wasn't them. There were other boats with them.
Ah, yes. And so that dynamic is not even talked about a lot when you hear this story. What were the other people in the other boats doing? And then to be, you know, how close were they? Were they able to hear Jesus speak to the wind too? Or, wow, wait a minute, what happened here? This storm came out of nowhere and now it's just glass. It's calm. And you get this picture that you have a lot of questions about Jesus just coming from this story.
But I don't think they're any different than what we are. They didn't recognize him fully for what he was at that point, and I think we experience that same thing in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we grow in him, the more we see that. But for myself personally, there's been times in my life that I didn't recognize him for what he was or what he was doing in my life.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that, Lori. I mean, they're Jesus.
I don't like to be too critical of many people saying, well, they were right there with him. They should have known. But, you know, he is within us. We should know, too.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. I think this because so oftentimes we put this... I have done this. I have put God in a box or in this, a picture of what God is like in my mind. I've created this image of God that he is not. And when we do that, when we create an image of God in our mind that he is not and lock ourselves into this, we quench him. He's not free to do use us as he wants us to be use us with, and to for us to do things for him. And when we make God into an image that he is not, the question is are we worshiping the one true God when we do that? So, well, let's go on a little bit further. Let's see. I think maybe we'll unpack another story here that. May help us with some of these questions and some of our thoughts. But I agree with Lord. We tend to be critical. It's easy for us to read something like this and say, well, he's right there. We're going to just pick on you. But we are in the same situation. Mark 5, 1 through 5. Someone read that.
Then they came to the other side of the sea, to the country of Gadarenes, and when he had come out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one could bind him, not even with chains, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been pulled apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces, neither could anyone tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying out and cutting himself with stones.
Mm. What goes to your mind when you hear that, read that, just those first five verses? He's a wild man. He's tormented. Do you feel sad for him?
Yeah, I mean, he's living in a cemetery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's up in the mountains on the side of the hill, wherever, in tombs, he's wandering about. He's cutting himself with sharp stones. You know, why is this man like this?
Because of the unclean spirit?
Right. Unclean spirits, yeah. Mm-hmm. It goes back to a deeper issue, though.
To me, when I first said that, without knowing anything, I would say maybe he was dealing with some kind of mental illness.
Could be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mental illness. They probably didn't have terminology like that today, but it is a mental thing to cut yourself. You go to a whole different level.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously something that is within you that's driving you to do that, whether it's pain from something that took place as an upbringing, as a child. We don't know that. There could be some other things that are involved in there. But there is a much deeper issue here that I think that in other words, with this man, not all of us are like him, right? We're not going around in the middle of tunes or screaming and shouting. So, but yet we're bored just like this man was. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We were born just like this man. This man was born under the control of Satan. We were born under the control of Satan. Using the two kingdoms. Right? That we've been learning about. Just as we can't help ourselves, this man couldn't help himself. And we were set free because of Jesus. Right? This man is going to be set free because of Jesus. Satan and his demons have one purpose, and that purpose is to what? Destroy, right. Destroy us. Right. Now, Sunday I talked about that Jesus was the kingdom. Came to crush.
Sorry.
Oh, you're fine. Satan came to crush the head of the serpent.
Mm-hmm.
When Jesus came and was born, we have this. Now, who's Satan going after? He can't get to Jesus now. He knows that Jesus has come to destroy him and to crush his head. Who's Satan going to attack? He's going to attack us who bear the image of God, right? So he's going to go after us. Because he wasn't able to defeat the deliverer all the way up through, because God kept bringing his plan about, right? All the way through that. So now we have this attack on man, and Satan turns his focus there. And his goal is to do that. And because he hates God so much that he's willing to hate man whom God created. If you look at this story and see what the demons were doing to this man, it is mind-boggling to think that something such as a demon or an angel can have control over our bodies or over us to the point where he or she will begin to do things to the body that just utterly causes destruction. Literally, this man is cutting himself. I don't know if he's trying to kill himself or if he's just has become to enjoy the infliction of pain. Mentally, did it start with just little cuts? And there's so much of that happens today in our world. You can see it, due to pain and things that it helps take our mind off of it. People use alcohol, drugs, burn themselves. Doing things to take their mind off the pain that's deep within them. And so that's, you have this man. And that could be possibly what's going on. I have no idea. It just says they control his life. They control where he lived. Think about that. The demons control where he lived. The townspeople would chain this man up. Okay, because he was so wild. They were chaining this man up. So he would walk around. And you've got to understand this. This man wasn't like this all the time. There must have been times where he was calm enough to where people could get on him and chain him up. You know, because if he was acting wild like this and was snapping the chains and was running around, you're not going to subdue somebody like that very easily. There was a man in the prison that, and I may have told this story before, but he was probably about the height of my wife. How tall are you? 5 foot tall, so I don't know how tall he was, but he was a little short fella. And, you know, you've ever seen handcuffs that police officers use, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's what he had on. He had some handcuffs like that. And he was in the same situation here. He could snap those handcuffs when he was out of control. Literally take the handcuffs and break them in half. Now, I've never seen anybody do that. Before he came to know Jesus, that he could easily come when he was under the control of Satan, he would snap those handcuffs. And I always think of the story when I think of him. And it's just something that in our day, sometimes it's like, wow, I don't really know if I could ever picture myself seeing that or understanding that. It's out there. It happens. Satan is out to destroy people. And he would continually to do that. I also liken this story to someone who might struggle with suicidal thoughts. Things like that. Where does that come from? That's not of God. When you struggle with that, God doesn't want you to kill yourself. That's something that Satan has attacked. And so there's always these thoughts that happen, and known several people who have ended their life, and you wonder what kind of pain were they going through that caused them to make that choice. And you've got to trust that God is a just God and that He understands that torment that they were going through during that time. And so there's that. Let's read 6 and 7. Let's see what Jesus does. This story really talks about the heart of God and the compassion for people.
When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me," for Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit."
So we have this man, when Jesus is still a ways away, the man saw him, so he's coming out. Remember, the lake is in a thing, and he's in the tombs and in the caves and running around on the mountains there, it says. And so you can get Jesus coming out of the lake, and he's walking up towards the town, where this place is at. And the man sees him a ways off, and it's in the... When you have this, you hear this. He cries out, or he shrieks out, or he screams out. What did the evil spirits know about Jesus?
He knew
he was the Most High God. They cry out in the name of God themselves, asking him, "I beg you, don't torture me." So you have this whole aspect of them recognizing who Jesus as the Son of God was, because he was there. They knew their end, and they didn't want to go there. They knew their end. They didn't want to go there. And so they were afraid. And... the man cries out here in verse, let's read verse 9, read verses 9 through 10.
Then he asked him, "What is your name?" And he answered, saying, "My name is Legion, for we are many." Also he begged him earnestly that he would not send them out of the country.
So Jesus demands him, and so what does this tell us about Jesus again?
Power.
He has power, right? And he demands, "What is your name?" Mm-hmm. And they say, "My name is Legion," because there are many of us inside this man.
Right. So, like an army.
Right. Jesus is communicating to these evil spirits, just carrying on a conversation like you and I are carrying on a conversation. And he asked them, "What is your name?" And we're legion, because there are many of us. When they use the word legion, a legion was about 6,000 soldiers during Rome at this time. Whether there were 6,000 evil spirits inside this man, or they were using that as, there's a lot. There's a lot of evil spirits going on inside this man. This man is tormented by multiple, not just one evil spirit. Notice it's not Satan himself who is inside this man. Because Satan cannot be in all places at all at one time. He puts his evil spirits inside of mankind. And we know that Satan sets up princes of his kingdom in certain areas. We know that from the story of Daniel, that they're not always there. They will resist messengers from God wanting to bring a message to mankind. We do know that. And so they are there to combat or fight against God and his angels. And so here they are. But they knew they couldn't stand up against Jesus. And so they ask him, "Please don't even send us out of this place. We don't want to leave this place." Notice that. It says right there at the beginning, when the evil spirits begged him again and again to not send them to some distant place. Notice that evil spirits don't like to leave or go into a different area. You know, you see that there? They don't want to go, you know. So if somebody has an evil spirit and you pray and do like Jesus did here and talk to the evil spirit and say, "Hey, get out." Notice they're not going to go very far. They don't want to go very far. They don't want to just go from, you know. And so what does Jesus do? 11 through 13.
"Now there was there on the mountainside a great herd of swine feeding, and they besought him, saying, Send us into the swine, that we may enter into them. And he gave them leave, and the unclean spirits came out and entered into the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep hill into the sea, and number about 2,000, and they were drowned in the sea."
So we have this picture here of you now have a picture of entering into other people. Because if you have 2,000 pigs on a hillside or the countryside, you know, on the hill, I would imagine there's people watching them.
Yeah.
And so you have all of a sudden herds of pigs that are farming on the side of the hill there. And Jesus, he's in a conversation with the demon, says, "Yeah, okay. No problem." They ask him, "Can we go live in those pigs?" That tells you about the... I have to laugh here because as I'm sitting here thinking about this, what's that tell you about the evil spirits? Unclean. They're not... there's not something that I would want to follow or, you know, be a part of. If you are not smart enough to say, "Hey, let me go into someone else, let me go over to the pigs."
Right.
Well, the farmer now turns and you see these pigs start to go wild because the demons enter into the pigs. Mm-hmm. Now, if there's 6,000 demons in this man and you calculate, that means there's 3 demons per pig. If you do the math on that, that enter. Now, if there's not 6,000. But anyways, 2,000 pigs charge and run right headlong into the sea. And they drown.
Much to the dismay of their owners.
Well, let's see what happens here in 14 through 17. Let's see what happens to the owner. Now, you're a farmer, Paul, right? You have chickens. Now, imagine your chickens. Okay? Imagine this happened to your chickens. or anybody who has livestock or animals. Josh and Sarah, your chickens. Now, just think about this. Let's see what happens here.
The men who tended them ran off and reported it in the town and in the countryside, and people went to see what had happened. They came to Jesus and saw the man who had been demon-possessed by the legion sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. The eyewitnesses described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs. Then they began to beg him to leave the region.
Okay, so you have this great thing happen. The people, the herdsmen didn't come up to Jesus and say, wait a minute, you just killed our 2,000 pigs. How are you going to pay up? No, they leave. They run back to the town and tell them, hey, you got to come down and see us. We just lost 2,000 pigs. And it's because of the man, you know, the man that we chained up and he's running around the tombs at night and yelling and screaming and cutting himself. He's now saying, well, you got to come see this. So all the town rush out. You got to imagine there's not how many people are in the town. Let's say there's 100 people. So you have 100 people now flocking down the hillside to where Jesus and everybody's sitting there. And this man, they come upon him and they see this man who was, and he's sitting there fully clothed in his right mind.
But they were afraid.
And they were afraid. You would think that this, if there, you can tell, this tells you a lot about the people of the town. Either they got so tired of this man destroying their town that they ended up hating him. Or their dislike for him, or they had no compassion for his soul, or for him as a person or human being. But they were afraid of what took place, and they began to yell or plead with Jesus, get out of here. We don't want you around. What?
Wow.
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that taking place today? We have somebody who is completely just mentally disabled, and God heals them miraculously. And we're saying, God, we don't want you around. We don't want to have anything to do
so
with you.
So what was their fear?
Well, that's a good question.
They were concerned about those pigs.
Were they concerned?
They wanted them to... They were more concerned about losing the pigs than they were about Jesus.
Or were they afraid of what Jesus could see into their own life?
Ah.
They were afraid. That fear is different than, like, if they said they were angry, I could have understood that better. If they were angry, they lost all the pigs. But the fear, I always associate fear with something personal that I feel personal within. Me.
Maybe they were the culprit of the man being the way he was. Maybe he was a young boy that had a mental condition or was, you know, not like normal, and they picked on him, bullied him, whatever. I don't know. And drove him to the crazy, being crazy like that, to where the man just, you know, opened his soul up to Satan. And I mean, we don't know that. We don't know that part of the story. God doesn't want us to understand really what, why they, well.
I mean, he tells us they were afraid, so it's there for a reason.
Yes. And we know that their scripture says, I'm not going to be able to quote it here. Let's see here.
Do you think sometimes, though, their fear came from something? Because they couldn't comprehend or understand.
What was that?
Yes, that's very possible. But I think it goes much deeper than that, because if you go on a little further in the New Testament, there's a verse that says, perfect love casts out fear. And I think it comes back to the heart of the issue here, is that these people didn't have a love for this man. Or for other things. It could come back to that they loved possessions or things more than people. And you have this thing where they, and then they, okay, well, I'm not going to listen to God. I don't want to listen to him. Now, I don't know that if these people were Jewish or of the Israelites, because Israel, if you were a Israelite, you couldn't have anything to do with pork.
That's correct.
So this town could have been a town not of Jewish descent or Jewish background, which would have had, they might have had idol worship. They might have been what they would have considered pagans in their day. And so you now have a town that says, hey, we don't want God in our lives. Even though they saw the power that Jesus was given by his Father over because of being the Son of God and because he created them.
Could they have been afraid of the power, maybe?
Could have been. Yeah, this guy's way more powerful than our gods. Or this guy is way more powerful than what we believe in. We don't want to have anything to do with him. The lesson here talks about that the majority of these townspeople, because they said, had no interest in listening to who God was or anything about him. And they tied it that it's much like today. The majority of the world wants nothing to do with God. They don't want to listen. You talk about God. Oh, I believe in God. I believe God's here. Yeah, I don't believe in Jesus.
Right.
I believe in there's a God, but I don't believe in Jesus. You know, he was a nice man on earth, but not the Son of God. And so you have this thing where the people, they begged the man to leave. They begged Jesus to leave. Yeah.
It's like they wanted to live the way they were living before.
Yes.
They wanted to live under the control of the evil one.
And I think that we do that too sometimes. Well, don't touch my pocketbook. or, you know, I gotta live a certain way, you know. I'll read my Bible for 10 minutes a day, and that's good. Me and God have our time, but I got some other things I gotta do. I'm just using that as one aspect of it. But I think there's a lot that we can learn from this story about, well, we know the heart of Jesus, the heart of the Father, compassion. He saw this man, he heals him. We don't know what happened to this man afterwards. We don't know what this takes place. Let's read 18 through 20 and finish the story out here. We only hear a little bit. Let's see what Jesus tells him.
And when he was come into the ship, chapter 5?
Yeah, 18 through 20.
I'm not sure I was in the right. And when he was come into the ship, he that had been possessed with the devil prayed him that he might be with him. Howbeit Jesus suffered him not, but said unto him, go home to thy friends, and tell them how great things the Lord hath done for thee, and had compassion on thee. What is that, just 19?
Verse 20.
Oh, 22. I'm sorry. And he departed and began to publish in Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him, and all the men did marvel.
So we have this story here where the man begs to go with Jesus. And Jesus, very interesting here, what verse 20 says here. Says the man went off to visit the 10 towns of that region. That's the translation how it's written here. The 10 towns. I can imagine this man here. He begs to leave with Jesus. He begs to leave with Jesus. And Jesus says no. Now, if I was like this man, having that many demons in it, and God heals me, I get the sense that this man, if Jesus would have allowed him to come alongside him, this man would have ate up everything, done everything for Jesus, even went as far as, in this day, probably would have been like some of the monks or the when they're in this time and age, when a man or a woman would sell their soul to the devil, in other words, they would literally tattoo themselves or make themselves a slave to the synagogue of that idol. So if you go back and study history, there were often times where slaves would leave their master, run away, and would run towards these cities of refuge or refuge, and they would then say, hey, well, you saved me, so now I'm going to follow you. I'm going to, here, tattoo me or mark me so that I am now, I bear your mark. And their original owner or slave owner could not have them ever again because now they are a dedication or a sacrifice to the gods. Their life was, in other words, was given over to them. And I would imagine this man here was, in essence, wanting to do that with Jesus. And Jesus didn't want this man to do that. Rather, this he wanted him to go proclaim, hey, tell everybody what God did. What God did for you.
Plus, the town didn't want him there anyway.
Right. But if there's 10 towns in the region, or 10 cities in the region, and if you have 10 or 6,000 demons in you, everybody's going to know about this man. Mm-hmm. And now he's walking around in his right mind, sane. Notice the other part about this. What else stands out to you before I go and say one more thing about this man? What are you going to say, Lord?
It wasn't particularly about him.
Well, whatever.
It just struck me that we read a story previously where Jesus told him, don't tell anybody, and now he's telling
right.
him, tell
everybody. Yeah, I thought
it was right. It's the opposite, right?
It's
the opposite.
Well, the cat's out of the bag, so.
It's the opposite. The thing I find very interesting about this man is this man would have had no training. Mm-hmm. He would have had absolutely no training whatsoever. Only thing he would have had, and we don't know here the amount of time it took for those herdsmen who were guarding the pigs to get up to the town and then bring the whole town back down. Was it 20 minutes? Was it 30 minutes? Was it a half hour? Was it 3 hours? Was it, you know, half the day? We don't know that. But we do know that Jesus sat with him and his 12 disciples who, there's nothing in this story here about the disciples and what they were going through their minds. It's all about the herdsmen and the townspeople and the man who was healed. But we do know that it said here that when they came back, they saw the man sitting there fully clothed and sane. So I would imagine that Jesus and him had a little conversation. Maybe they got up and prayed, I don't know. Maybe they thanked God. They were worshiping God, thanking him for what he had done for this man. We don't know if the man's name changed from Legion to a name like us. We don't know that. But can you imagine carrying the name around? Hey, my name is Legion. Why? Because I had 6,000 demons in me. And I want you to know about this man named Jesus over here because he just freed me from them. Oh, we knew about you. Yeah, look at the scars on my arms, my neck, and my legs. Look what Jesus did for me. You get the picture of what this man, he was a walking billboard for Jesus, if I could minimize it like that. I don't want to minimize it. But this man had a heart now. Yeah, he was following Jesus. And he was going to go tell everybody. He went to 10 towns. We don't know what ended up happening. Was he at the cross? Was he there? Did he end up coming back after telling them about Jesus? But we do know that this man went ahead and did. And everybody that listened to his story was amazed. It says that they were amazed about what he had told them. And he had no training. We don't have any training. We're learning this together. And each one of us has that same story that Jesus freed us from. We all have scars, maybe not like he does, where, you know, he cut himself, but we all have scars that Jesus healed us and that we can tell somebody about. Pretty powerful story when you look at what Jesus did here for this man and the power that he had over the demons. And, yeah. Kind of gets you excited, don't it? What else did you learn? That's all that the lesson has for us today, and that's why I was saying we probably could go on to another lesson, but it's almost 8 o'clock anyway, so.
I find it interesting that he grants the demons' wishes when they say to send us away from the pigs. Don't send us away from the wrong.
Yeah, why would Jesus grant demons their wish? Anybody want to answer that?
He knew that they would, their demise was going to be drowning.
Did the demons die with the pigs?
That's what I wanted to do.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
God, no. Where are the demons going to go when Jesus comes back for his church, his bride, when the end? Where are the demons going? They're going to hell. That's where we know that they're going. Did the demons go directly to hell? Did they directly die when the pigs died? It's a very good question. I don't know if I have the answer for that.
That's not going to be the end.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That, I mean, that's just my opinion.
Well, even if this man had eventually done something that would have caused his life to end, like suicide, cut himself too deep, you know, something crazy like that, that just frees them to find other souls that are opening themselves up and wanting.
I would challenge you with that, Joel. I would challenge you. The angels follow Satan. Satan placed those demons in that man, and they couldn't free themselves until Jesus came along. Those demons were trapped inside of him, and only Jesus could remove them out. Remember, because they said, "Would you allow us to go over here?" I would challenge that thought.
But once the person is dead,
what happens is
they're immortal, so why would they not move on?
I don't know. Well, I'm not. Oh, you're okay. I misunderstood your question. You're saying when the person dies,
right,
where do those demons go?
The reason they ask,
finding a new host or whatever.
Okay, I misunderstood. I retract what I said. What I meant was when they were alive, when the man was alive.
No,
because when the pigs died, that freed them to go.
Yeah,
It could be very well. That could be very well.
But
yeah.
You were saying that they don't want to go very far.
Right, they didn't want to go very far.
No, they stayed in the town because that town had already basically let Jesus know that they weren't interested in him. So that means who are they going to look to? Who are they
And if those herdsmen were there when Jesus heard the demon in the conversation, if they heard that conversation going back around, and they said, "We don't want to go to a distant place. Don't send us away." I would be scared. I would be scared out of my skin. I mean, I think I would be leaving that town. I don't think I'd be staying there.
Yeah, after you see the guy cry like that.
Exactly right. I don't know that demons have as much power over what they do. And that's what I was alluding to. Once Satan said, "Okay, in place that, you're here. This is where your realm is." I don't think they're afraid. Demons are afraid. They have a lot of fear, and they fear Jesus. And I know this. I mean, I've heard stories of people praying for people, and then where they're crying out to God on behalf, and then them feeling attacked because they know what they're up against, and so there is a real, in other words, we hear stories like this, but this takes place today in our world today.
But you know, they were afraid.
They were afraid
that they were afraid to go back. They didn't want to go to hell because they would rather stay in pigs than have to go back there. So you could tell they didn't like that either.
Yeah.